Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
AJ Baim comes in. He's a great author. He's written so many great books, and I've listened to just about all of them. So he'll be in to shed a little light on what's going on in his world, new book and all, and hang out and do the news as well. First, I'll tell you about Tommy John. Secret to staying sweat-free this summer. Tommy John Summer Ready. Ultra-breathable underwear and bras. Cool cotton underwear for men and for women. Like having your own on-body AC unit. Made from premium natural Pima cotton for enhanced airflow. It evaporates sweat super fast. I tell you, I wear mine every night. I hit that rowing machine and work up that froth, and I just walk around and wear them dry. Lounge pants, lazy day joggers, soft Zoom-ready tees and polos. Upgrade to Tommy John. Do it today for enhanced, super breathable designs. This stuff is the best. You'll never go back to what you're currently wearing if you're not currently wearing Tommy John. They got the best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free. Guarantee. It's Tommy John. No adjustment needed. Right, Dawson?
For a limited time, go to TommyJohn.com/Adam to get 20% off site-wide. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off site-wide. TommyJohn.com/Adam. See site for details.
The Adam Carolla Show presents AJ Baim's birthday cocktail party for July 24th. Let's see who else shares his birthday. Now, first up, Jennifer Lopez. Hey, look, it's Amelia Earhart. Now entering Karl Malone. Welcome, Wonder Woman, Linda Carter. And Michael Richards. Enjoy your party, AJ. Now, back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Not a bad birthday cocktail party. I mean, Amelia Earhart. That's interesting, especially someone who loves aviation like AJ Baim. AJ, known for a while, of course, we've worked with him on Go Like Hell and 24-Hour War and all that as well. Always good to see you, my friend.
It's great to be there. I'm wearing sunglasses in the studio. I didn't even realize I was wearing them, so I apologize. Luckily, there's no camera staring at me. Yeah, I'm that guy today.
Your process, I'm very interested in it. I know you pick out subjects you like, and in Go Like Hell, I mean, you're way ahead of the curve in that story, obviously, with what happened after that. And then Arsenal of Democracy kind of, well, there's a little Ford component there. But how do you pick out the subjects? What is that process like of your books?
Well, I'll tell you what. I'd like to write, like, I grew up a huge movie fan, so I like to write books that feel like movies. And you can't have a great story without a super incredible climax. Mm-hmm. So the first thing I think of is the climax. What's the climax of the story? And then once I've got that figured out, once I know that's going to be gripping and exciting and see who the characters are who are involved there, then I work my way backwards. Those are the main characters at the beginning.
It's a good idea. I mean, so it's like you would write a story about the, I guess it was 1980 American hockey team, knowing that that was a crazy big win at the end, and then sort of go back and write it.
That's exactly what. In fact, I just wrote that story. Did you see that?
Because no.
Okay, it's the 40th anniversary of the Miracle on Ice in February. So I just wrote a big story about it. Yeah.
Where is it out? Where is it?
AARP, the most widely read magazine in the country.
When did that come out?
February.
It's weird that I use that as an example. Yeah.
It's
weird.
That,
so if you're tuned in a little, you'll get lucky a lot with weird coincidences like we just had. I had never thought about that as an example, but it's weird that you're sitting here and you wrote that thing. And then people could go, well, maybe I did see the article and I didn't know about it, but I don't remember seeing it. And I don't read a lot of articles or even any. So good. So AJ, I don't know what you can talk about in terms of Go Like Hell, Ford v. Ferrari, and all that kind of stuff. And now Michael Mann's doing a Ferrari thing with, who's playing? What's his name?
Hugh Jackman.
Hugh Jackman is playing Enzo Ferrari. But did you settle all that stuff? Is it still an ongoing? Is it fluid? Is it in the courts? How did that work?
No, it's nothing like that. I have nothing against that movie at all. I'm thrilled by its success. We're selling a lot of books. And, you know, the weird thing is there was a movie being developed based on my book for so many years. That specific movie didn't have my name on it. So believe it or not, I haven't even seen it. So I haven't gone to see it. What did you think about it?
You haven't seen Ford v. Ferrari?
That's correct. I haven't seen it.
Wow.
I'm probably the only person on the planet. What did you think? Did you like it?
Yeah, it's entertaining. It's a good movie. I'm happy for it because of my business with those events. And we did a Shelby documentary called Shelby American as well. So, yeah. Now, you can't sit there and pick everything apart because I know the story very well. You know the story very well. And it'll ruin it if you watch it with your jeweler's loop and go, oh, they didn't do that, or his son wasn't that big a deal, or, you know, whatever. They took artistic license. Fine. Just enjoy the movie. Just because you know stuff. I guess it's like, I feel like a chef who would like to go eat out at other restaurants, and I don't want to just pick it apart all the time. I want to enjoy my meal. You know what I mean? So yeah. That's the way I kind of felt about that movie.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I heard the gamut. I heard the nerds. You always get in the car world, you get the nerds. They always want to tell you how much they know and how much you don't.
Right.
So those are the people who say, oh, that movie wasn't good for this reason or that reason. And then you get the other side. Like, people are just so passionate about these brands and thrilled to see the whole thing happen.
Dewey Defeats Truman. Why this book, which is available as we speak on Amazon?
Well, again, I wrote this book called The Accidental President about Harry Truman's first 4 months in office, and it went bonkers. People went crazy for it, and it kept selling. It's still, it was number three Kindle, I think, 2 weeks ago. Number three, best-selling Kindle book. So we figured we had to do a Truman follow-up. And so, as I was saying, you know, what's the best story? What's the story you want to tell? You start with the climax, and the climax is, you know, him winning the 1948 election. It's just an extraordinary story. So it started like that.
And tell us the story. Well, not the entire story. But.
It took me 330 pages to tell. But basically, we're talking about the greatest upset, the greatest comeback, and the greatest upset in American electioneering history.
Right. And that's the famous Dewey Defeats Truman on the, I guess it's the New York Times?
Chicago Tribune.
Oh, Chicago Tribune.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically Rocky. It's
right.
Like Rocky, the movie, except it's political pugilism.
Mm-hmm. And what do they think? I mean, they didn't have all the computers and, you know, the CNNs and all that stuff, but they still had an idea of who was ahead and who was losing in the polls.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely. So all the pollsters had pretty much counted Truman out right at the beginning. And some of the pollsters said, we're not even going to do polls because there's no point. It's a waste of time and money. It was the first election to play out in the television machine. So that's pretty cool.
Right.
The first election in the atomic age. So literally, as these guys are campaigning across the country, there are literally nuclear bombs going off as we're testing, you know, larger and larger weapons in the Pacific. There's a lot happening.
And is why was it a foregone conclusion? Like, why didn't people think Truman stood a chance?
Well, the easiest way to answer that question is we were coming out of World War II. And it was a disaster. I mean, what we did to win World War II then now had to be undone. And there wasn't any way to do it smoothly. The economics of it, the migration, figuring out basically a lot of economics. And people were really, really, really pissed off. And so 16 years of New Deal Democrats, they're figuring, OK, let's do this. We're going to put a Republican in office. And so that's what everybody believed.
I was talking to Chris, as I was thinking about you coming in, and I heard an article about them wanting to tear down a Lincoln statue somewhere on some college campus, and I thought, oh, where does it end, man? But then I've always used the example, and I'm not sure why more people aren't wired this way. The question is, you know, this college student said, we got to tear down this statue of Lincoln because he said bad things about African Americans. But it's like, yeah, but he did good things for African Americans. And I never got the part where it's like, this person says this, but they're doing that. And it made me immediately think of Charles Lindbergh and immediately think of Henry Ford. And it's like, those guys were big time anti-Semites who wanted to kill Nazis. Badly. So
counterintuitive.
All right. But I would rather have him talking shit about Jews and killing Nazis than the other way around. It'd be nice if they didn't talk shit about Jews and then just killed Nazis, but that's not really the choice. They were anti-Semitic, and then they did a good job of trying to blow up Germans. But well, go ahead.
Well, just for starters, it's fascinating to think. So these two guys, Henry Ford and Lindbergh, were the preeminent anti-war activists, anti-FDR activists, traveling around the country. These men are hugely famous. They're huge anti-Semites, and they were both awarded with a Nazi medal, both of them.
Wow.
Which is incredible if you think about it. Now, Pearl Harbor happens, and these two guys, they get together and they say, all right, we might as well stop building cars now. And they actually partner to build the most destructive weapon in our arsenal at the time, which was the B-24, and mass-produce it so it became and still is the most mass-produced American military aircraft of all time.
At Willow Run.
That's right.
They built a whole big factory somewhere around Dearborn, I guess. And Lindbergh was the test pilot, right?
Yeah. So Lindbergh comes and he starts working at – it's the biggest airplane. They build from scratch in an empty field, the biggest airplane factory in the world. And Lindbergh is in charge of test flying these B-24s before they go into battle. But also he starts conducting these wild experiments of seeing how – what altitude he can fly in a fighter plane and still survive and test superchargers too.
Oh, really?
Yep.
That like for the Mustang.
That's right.
Yeah. Those engines were supercharged as V-12s. Merlin Marine and Allison maybe made those things. And Rolls-Royce, sorry. So my question is why aren't we tearing down statues of Lindbergh? Because that guy was a horrible anti-Semite. And it's the same difference, which is, oh, he did some good things, but look at what he said. So Gene, I'm not telling your tribe what to do, but let's saddle up, shall we? You know what I mean?
Yeah, let's get going. Yeah.
And Henry Ford, for that matter. There are two Fords in Dearborn statues and one in Fort Myers, Florida. And Lindbergh has a monument in Georgia and one in Minnesota State Capitol, one in San Diego, if memory serves. Is that right?
None in St. Louis?
Yeah. Where's the spirit of St. Louis, man? He flew that thing right through the Utah Arch. It's an inside joke.
I got a question for AJ.
Yeah, what do you got?
AJ, I'd always heard, and correct me if I'm wrong, because you're the expert, that as vice president, that Truman didn't know about the Manhattan Project. In fact, he wasn't told about it until he took over as president. Is that true?
That's true. So that's all in my book, The Accidental President. What happened is FDR dies. It's 4:09 p.m., I think, something like that, 7:09, whatever. East Coast time. Truman finds out. He gets rushed to the Oval Office. He takes the oath, and suddenly he's president of the United States. And the Secretary of War, Henry Stimson, calls him into this little room, shuts the door, and says, "Hey, now you're the president of the United States. We have this little secret we need to tell you, but I can't really tell you what it is." And that's all Truman learns that night. So he's president now. He goes home. He lives on this little apartment in Connecticut Avenue. He has a ham sandwich and a glass of buttermilk and goes to sleep. And then when he shows up at work the next day, that's when he finds out about it.
Kind of short-sighted not to tell the vice president of the president who has polio that what's not going on. Like, didn't you see an expiration date coming?
And amazingly high blood pressure. I mean, everybody knew he was going to die, and he didn't tell
What year did he die?
April
12th, 1945. And he never knew about the Manhattan Project.
Well, that's why I wrote that book. I found it so fascinating that the night he becomes president, he doesn't know about the Manhattan Project.
Right.
4 months later, he drops the bomb. So that's the book, because that's the story. 4 months of time.
FDR obviously knew.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That's Manhattan Project was – we brought all the big former, I guess, German scientists, right? Jews that were fleeing and many others, and they just started the space program for the atomic bomb. There's a high school named after Lindbergh in St. Louis. So that's
tear it down.
That's problematic, down. Right? It's anti-Semitic.
And Dearborn named after Henry Ford.
Problematic.
Well, gotta go.
Tear it down.
I'm gonna get on the horn with the Anti-Defamation League.
Please, please do. As long as we're being consistent here. You know, it's funny as I you were talking about B-24 and B-24 Willow Run and the most produced military airplane. In my interviewing and research and then interviewing with Sean Penn, yesterday's guest, boy, talk about the bends. We go from Sean Penn to AJ. Cramping up.
But, you don't have to stand for this, AJ.
All right.
AJ Bane. No, so I was talking to him, and his dad flew in a B-24, and he flew over Germany, and he flew night runs, and he was a rear tail gunner and a bombardier, and he flew, I think, 37 missions, which is a lot more than they needed to fly, but he did fly in that aircraft. And it's kind of, I don't know, it's a, I don't know, what was it, seven stages of Kevin Bacon, or how much was it,
six degrees
of Kevin Bacon. Like, we've gotten the B-24 and Sean Penn's dad and AJ Bame all just sort of connected to one another in 5 seconds here.
I am the biggest Sean Penn fan on the planet.
Are you?
I'd be willing to bet that I've seen Fast Times at Ridgemont High more times than anybody, any walking human alive, wow, including you.
Well, I mean, I asked him about that and that process. And for those of you who heard yesterday's show, you heard it, but I'll just be quick. He said he went in for the audition and he whiffed it and started heading out to the parking lot. And the guy who was the casting director turned out to be good at his job, like ran out, caught him in the parking lot and went, "You didn't do a good job, but you could do this. So like, come back in and try this again." Not you got the part, just come back in and try it again, which he did, which is rare, right?
Do you remember Bad Boys?
I brought it up to him.
He was incredible. That scene where he puts the sodas into the pillowcase and beats that dude.
People, you know, the chasm between Spicoli and the character in Bad Boys, that's when I was like, oh, this guy can act. Because before that, he was Spicoli, and Bad Boys was like a super gritty... It was the next movie Sean Penn did, and it was super gritty, young guys in prison, scary, kind of scared straight, kind of a movie. Like, you don't want to end up there, go there. And he played this gritty, like, street kid who was a criminal who had nothing to do with Spicoli. Like, it was badass Sean Penn, sort of badass Sean Penn.
Super badass, but a redeeming character because he had this wonderful love for the female lead. And he was so faithful to her that made you like his character, even though he was a really violent dude.
So why haven't you seen Ford v. Ferrari? That seems like...
Seems strange to you?
It does.
Well, listen, again, all I can say is what I just already said. It was 7 years that my book was being developed. And, you know, I was on your show talking about it years ago. It was reported in the press and everything. That specific movie didn't have my name on it, and so I haven't seen it.
All right,
but I got nothing against it. I'm so happy,
Brian,
that it's successful.
Have you ever seen movies about? You only see movies about books you write, right? Or you haven't seen this? What's the rule?
I love movies, but I try not to see ones that have my name attached.
I saw a movie called Fantasia once, and then I realized, wait a minute, I didn't create this product, and I walked out in the middle of it.
I was halfway into Terminator 2, and I'm like, I had nothing to do with this, and I fucking walked out.
Oh man, I wish
thrilled
Sean
with
Penn
the success.
Was here.
It's great. I'm pleased it happened.
So, for you, you live a little out of town, right?
I live in the middle of nowhere.
Where is that middle of nowhere?
It's a small town called Granite Bay. So, I'm working on a new book now that's really, really, really controversial.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I'm going to make sure that everybody knows where I live, so when the crazies come out, they know where to find me.
What's so controversial about your new book subject?
It's about a guy named Walter White, and he identified as African-American, but his skin was as white as yours, and he becomes an investigator, an undercover investigator, investigating the lynchings of black people in the South.
Mm-hmm.
So starting in 1918 and 1919, and he starts writing about this and becomes this very successful investigator. And the stuff that he found down there is so unnerving and incredible, it will be hard for a lot of people to believe that these things actually happen in the United States of America.
And
at what point in the book do you think they're going to realize that it's not a book about Breaking Bad?
See, that's funny. That's actually in the introduction because part of the story is why you don't know who this guy is. He had a tragic fall from grace at the end of the book. And I'm not going to give away the ending right now, but there you go. Walter. That's why Walter White is, Breaking Bad. Exactly.
Did he come from a mixed background?
He did. Both of his parents were born into slavery in Atlanta. And he's, I guess it's 1906, and I think he's 11 years old. And the Atlanta riot happens, the Atlanta race riot.
What year was that? Sorry.
1906.
1906.
And so he sees this. This is in the first chapter. And he's standing on the porch of his house with a gun. He's 10 years old. And his father says to him, don't shoot. This is mob coming to get him.
Mm-hmm.
His father says, don't shoot until they step foot on our lawn.
Mm.
And then don't miss.
Mm. Mm.
And so he has this future where he could go and pass as white and live as a white person his whole life. He's a real brilliant guy, could be really successful. But he chooses to identify as black and he becomes the greatest racial crusader of his generation.
Wow.
Interesting guy.
And what we won't give away how he died, but when did he die?
1955.
So what did he make it to? What was that?
60-something. He literally worked himself to death.
Really?
Four packs. There he is. Four packs of cigarettes a day. You guys are good, man. That's him. So look at it.
Wow. Yeah, it does not look black. But I don't know. Ask Roseanne Barr. Let's see if she can... Because she's really the one that does the. She's the yardstick that we measure all race identification by.
Have we heard from her lately?
I have not heard from her in a while. I had a list of people that I kind of always studied as, like, when they were at the height of their powers, I was kind of saying to people, they're not as funny as you think they are. And they'd go, what do you mean? Pauly Shore's funny, you know, or whoever's funny. I'd go, not as funny as you think they are. And I think Roseanne has kind of proved
who's
proved
somebody
my point.
Who is as funny and funnier than you would think?
Well, I don't know. Off the top of my head, not that people don't know this, but my son just brought up Bill Hader and how funny he thought he was. And I was like, oh, my God, is that guy funny? And he's like, yeah, I like his whatever. And I said, have you ever seen the SNL bit where he's the Italian talk show host and he's like interviewing Robert De Niro? My son's like, no, I don't know that one. I was like, that guy, when that guy does, first off, you don't think of Bill Hader as this, just, you don't think of him like Will Ferrell. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't think of this like fountain of creativity and comedy. We know better than most people. I'm saying your average American doesn't go, Bill Hader, that guy's the funniest guy, whatever. But when you see him do his sort of androgynous entertainment reporter.
I actually have a poster of that. My 13-year-old daughter, she has a poster of that on the wall because she thinks she's 13. She thinks that's the funniest thing she's ever seen.
Yes, his name is, I don't know, Seth or something.
What's
I can't
his
remember
name?
His,
yeah. Oh,
we'll figure out his name.
Who knows his name?
When you realize he does that character and then does the Italian talk show host, you go, that fucking guy's got range, man.
I could see, just to watch that guy move his face. He's so talented. He could be funny without speaking.
Yeah, no, he's an amazingly talented guy. It's not a great example of like who's funny and, you know. But speaking of that, Bryan Cranston is a lot funnier probably than you think. And the reason I'm bringing up Cranston is my son is watching the Bejesus out of Breaking Bad, right? And it's kind of fun when your kids get a little older and they start stumbling onto shows that existed before them, but they're really enjoying it, you know? So he's watching Stefan.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know who Herb Welch is, but...
He's a reporter that Bill plays as well.
Oh, okay. So he's getting on to Breaking Bad. And so I said to him the other day, I said, you know, I did a crowdfunding thing with a movie I did, Road Hard, with Bryan Cranston in it, and you should see how funny he is. And my son was like, you did a thing with Bryan Cranston? I was like, yeah, I did a thing with Bryan Cranston. And I pulled up this bit that we did. We just shot it above his garage in his house in the valley. And he was so goddamn funny in it. And I realized, oh, he's got amazing chops. It could steer toward drama, but definitely could be guided toward funny as well.
Yeah, well, listen, good on that guy for, he earned it. But that's his Walter White character is the best. Like, if you're any actor in the world, what's the character you want to play? That's the one.
Find the Italian guy, but find that... crowdfunding thing with me and Cranston too. It'll make you laugh.
And don't forget about his Keith Morrison from Dateline.
Oh, yeah, when Bill Hader does Keith Morrison. Yeah, I mean, he's super goddamn funny. All right, I'll play it. It'll work from an audio standpoint, and we'll play 2 minutes of it.
Okay, yeah, these are just the outtakes from
that one. Okay. Get the regular one. Because it's easy to find. It's on the internet.
I remember hearing Anthony Hopkins even wrote a letter to Bryan Cranston after watching Breaking Bad, just saying that he's the best actor he's ever seen ever.
Really?
Yeah.
That could have been AJ with his nom de plume of Anthony Hopkins, which he does a lot. He wrote one. Bill Hader got the same letter on Anthony Hopkins. All right, let me hit JB Weld here, everybody. JB Weld, DIY projects. You want to get through those. You want to save money. You want to avoid paying the repairman or having that guy with all his germs and his big boots and his butt crack coming through your house. Big or small repairs, home or garage, ordinary household glue. Well, it's just ordinary. You need something stronger. You need something better. You need JB Weld. We're proud of JB Weld. We're proud that they're sponsors of the show. These guys are great. I know the owner. Pros and DIYers have been trusting JB Weld for over 50 years. It's proudly made in the United States of America. And like I said, I was hanging around SEMA. AJ knows SEMA because he loves cars. And I wandered into the JB Weld booth. I struck up a conversation with the owner. Next thing you know, they're advertising on this program. So God bless them. Metal, wood, plastic, and more. Don't glue it. JB Weld it. Available at Home Depot, JBWeld.com, Lowe's, AutoZone, Advance Auto Parts, O'Reilly, Walmart, Amazon, Michaels, and more. All right. So we have that clip for a second.
Hey, it's Adam Carolla, and you know, ever since Sports Illustrated called my last movie, The Hammer, the best sports comedy of 2008, people have been asking, when are you going to make another movie, Ace? Well, I haven't.
It's long overdue.
It's called Road Hard, and with the generosity and help of people like you, and of course an assist from Mr. Bryan Cranston, I know it's going to be a huge success.
Hey, I'm flattered that I'm even, you know, involved in a small part.
You're flattered. I'm co-starring in a movie with Bryan Cranston. I mean, that is awesome.
Wait a minute. No. But I'm happy to help you here doing this, raising the money for it, but I can't be. Oh, God. I can't be in the movie with you.
But
Road
when
Hard.
Yeah, that's the name of the movie. But
Ride 'em Hard.
No, it's not gay porn. It's a movie about a comic.
Sure, it's
on the road and the struggles.
Did you see Argo by any chance?
Did you?
Yeah. Kind of carried that movie, right?
Yeah, you were great.
It won Best Picture, an Oscar.
Yeah.
Out of all the pictures.
Yeah.
The best.
Right. That's why I came to you to be in Road Hard, because I was like,
right, but do you see where that would go? You know what I mean?
Clearly.
My agents would take a shit in the middle of Wilshire Boulevard if they heard that I was going to be in a movie with you.
Is there any circumstance under which you'd work on Road Hard?
No. If you backed up a Brinks truck and it bumped into another Brinks truck that was unloading the money for me that it would take for me to do this movie. And the carts would bump into this mound of cocaine that was up there and women everywhere. And then still, no. I would rather play the gay pimp in Deuce Bigelow, Pakistani Gigolo. If I had to give my agents a choice between doing an Adam Carolla film or doing a snuff film, they would have to discuss it.
All right, you can stop.
If they were remaking Deliverance,
they would have to discuss it. I like that. I mean, we wrote all those jokes for him, but I mean, he did go later on when he's got all his Emmys. It's kind of you can go to the outtakes or whatever, but he was great. They would have to discuss.
He delivers.
Guy's got chops, man. What can I say? So who do you guys think is the funny, maybe quietly or underappreciated?
Jason Sudeikis.
Oh,
he's great. The one I was thinking of when you said funnier than you think, the guy who's maybe a little too weird for some people and they just don't get it a lot, but I find him fucking hysterical, is Will Forte. Mm. Will Forte is hysterical, and I love all of his weird subversive humor.
You know who's funny again is Eddie Murphy. Funny again. Dolomite movie was hilarious.
You know, I was glad to hear you say Jason Sudeikis because somebody, my book, which is called I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, was out of stock. It's going to be back now this Saturday. Is that true, Max Pata?
That's right.
So please order it on Amazon and they'll send it out on Saturday. I read a review. Somebody wanted, the guy makes me laugh is Jason Sudeikis books, young Woody Allen and Adam Carolla. And I thought, wow, that's a nice group to be
lumped in with.
All right. So do we have the Italian director or sorry, the Italian interviewer who's talking to Robert De Niro? This makes me laugh so goddamn hard. I'll just play a minute.
Oh, this one's not Robert De Niro. This is Shia LaBeouf.
Shia LaBeouf, whatever, doesn't matter.
Ragazze e ragazzi, è tempo per la rivista della televisione con mio Vini Verdeci.
Buonasera, e muri moni Vini Verdeci un santaracando. Noce, trasarevando italiano, bis reverende Shia LaBeouf.
Great to be here.
Thank you. Buonasera, Shia.
So it's not going to be a problem I don't speak Italian or anything like that, right?
No problemo. Okay. No. My English is very...
good.
Good.
Great.
Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah.
Mi raccomando, se torna a stare a pantore con Amito e Molototo e stare a varanto e... Manalo, Maria,
is that Italian or is that just having
no idea? It's just... makes me laugh.
You, Transformer.
Yes, yeah, Transformer, me, right.
From woman to man?
No. I think you're confused.
From man to woman?
No, I didn't change none of that. Transformers is a movie about robots from outer space. They change into cars.
You. Penis or vagina?
Penis.
So no sex change.
No, sex change.
Bella gara, non a me, non a valle!
Vincenzo, che non lo so, mi dispiace, amici!
All right. It always makes me laugh that they're eating spaghetti and smoking. I did like when they just lean into stuff, you know? Him arguing with what's his name always makes
Fred Armisen.
Fred Armisen. The whole De Niro one was just him arguing with Fred Armisen like the entire time. I don't know.
You know who's someone else that comes to mind? It didn't before, but someone who gets a lot of street cred for just being a great actor, but does not realize how funny he is. John Hamm.
Oh yeah, yeah.
He never, it's like you saw the first, 10 minutes or whatever of Bridesmaids or see him on SNL. You're like, oh, he does that too? He's not just a Don Draper? It's shocking the first time you see it.
Yeah, it's almost like they're acting. It's so funny how sort of we're wired as a human being that even though we know this guy's a great actor who's turning in this great performer as this 60s ad exec or this former school teacher with cancer, brain tumor, whatever he had, the point is we still buy into it and then we assume, well, I can't do other
that's
things. That's
do.
What he does. Yeah.
That's him.
Oh, when I was first talking to K-Rock about doing Loveline and hosting Loveline in the mid-90s, the program director said to me, we know your character, like we know Mr. Burcham is funny, but we don't know you're funny. And it was like a real conversation Perfect. Where we were talking about this character that I created that everyone loved and thought was super funny, but we didn't know if the guy created it was funny. So people buy into it, and then you have those kind of insane conversations.
Bridesmaids. Just a little note on John Hamm, hilarious, but I made the mistake of showing that. I mean, I guess I came out, 2008? and my kids were really little. So the first scene, if you're showing your kids Bridesmaids, skip to the second or third minute. Whoops.
Yeah.
They might be a little confused, but that's okay afterwards.
As I was showing that Bryan Cranston thing to my son, I realized, oh, now I have to explain to him what a snuff film is.
Okay. Tell us. Forget. What's a snuff film?
Forget all that stuff's in there. Do you have, Max, him just laughing and polishing his Emmys? And explain. It's in the outtakes, I think.
No, it's in the
action. It's in the main
one. Video.
It makes me laugh.
Oh, come on. You've got to see the absurdity in what you asked me, right?
I thought it was a long shot, and then you said, I'd love to be a part of...
Oh, my God. That is funny. That you got to write that into your movie.
Were you not being in the movie?
No, where you ask someone something so ridiculous that it's just obvious. It's funny to the audience, and then your character's like, what? It's good. It's self-deprecating. It's good. It'll work.
It hurts. It's cruel. It's painful.
It is funny. No. Have you ever felt one of these? No, I'm just asking. I don't want you to touch it.
You can stop. There's a funny outtake where he's holding his three Emmys and he goes, these are just the ones I keep in the house. The others are holding down the boat cover. And he points out to the yard. We laugh. That guy's funny. But also, I wrote all those jokes, and he's so good at it
that
people think he's doing those. Like, oh, that guy's so funny. It's like, he is, but I still did write all those Deuce Bigelow.
That's how you got him to do that.
Pakistani gigolo or whatever the hell it was.
So let me guess, he didn't make the movie with you.
No, he did not. But he did do that, and he does not.
He was in a poster in the background.
I was in a poster in the background. That's right. That is very true. All right. Let's take a break, and we'll come back. We'll do the news with AJ and Gina and Bald right after this.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gina Grad. Breaking viral. All those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gina Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Deep news with Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Oh,
well,
Chris,
we might have to
change. You got the boat joke?
Yeah.
Well, let's just hear
it.
Take four.
These are the ones I just keep in the house. The other ones are used out in the back to hold down the boat cover.
We got it. Hold down the
we may have to change the lyrics of that song next year from crazy Trump tweets to crazy Kanye tweets.
He's
throwing his hat in the ring. Surprised everybody over the weekend when he announced he plans to run for president this year. On Saturday night, we have the tweet. He tweeted, "We must now realize the promise of America by trusting God, unifying our vision, and building our future. I am running for president of the United States. Hashtag 2020 vision." Then Elon Musk jumped in and said, "You have my full support." And while there's no doubt that he would have interest in this, you know, this would be sort of fun for everybody, he did miss the filing deadline in most states. So I'm not sure if he's feeling okay or if this is a publicity stunt or
I tweeted something similar to what I'm about to say, which is, wouldn't it be great if we as a collective culture just turned our backs collectively on this nonsense and just didn't give them the time in this obvious ham-handed like publicity stunt? Like, this is the stupidest thing ever. And yet here we are, like, people are talking about this.
But here's the thing, Brian. With most celebrities, 99% of them, yes, you're absolutely right. But then you have your Britney Spears and your Amanda Bynes and your Kanye Wests, and you think, is everything on the up and up, or does somebody need to check in with them, you know, mentally, every medications balance? Because we've seen some people that really truly are developing some illnesses that, you know, they have conservatorship over them or whatever. And Kanye does stuff like this that I think warrant, you know, those conversations sometimes.
See, I'm all for it, and I'll tell you why. Can you imagine how fascinating the debates would be to see Kanye debating Joe Biden and Donald Trump? That's TV.
So is he saying he's running as an independent, I guess? Or is he Green Party or something?
Well, but
it's hard to believe. There's no further details.
And he also, he, you know, he's a fan of Trump, so he doesn't want to, you know, it'd be hard for him to take him down. I think, you know, they have quite a friendship budding.
I think I take a little different approach to this than Brian, which is, I think he's nuts and he just does things. I don't know.
That's what I was saying.
I don't know how, it all ends up being publicity, but I've also been around long enough. Like, the Kardashians were a joke, and now I think two of the sisters are approaching the billionaire club. Like, I can't say any idea is a bad idea or joke or nonsense anymore. There's like it goes on for too long. There's too many examples. I mean, just take his family and look at the Kardashians. Like, they should have been a flash in the pan, or they had a sex tape. Like, who cares? Now she's getting people sprung from prison and she wants to be a lawyer. Like, I just sit and watch it now. I don't say it can't happen or this is insane or anything, especially given the current president. But yes.
See if this changes your opinion. Kanye has a new single that dropped 3 days ago and has a new album coming out later this year.
Exactly.
Why are we talking about this?
Okay.
Well, he totally succeeded. It's a publicity stunt, and he succeeded. Yeah. Good for him.
Yeah, look, he's got Brian talking about it.
Yeah, jokes on us, jokes on me.
Well, I certainly hope this is a publicity stunt. Authorities in the Chinese region of Inner Mongolia are on high alert after a suspected case of bubonic plague. That's the disease that caused the Black Death pandemic. That was reported on Sunday. The case was discovered in a city northwest of Beijing. That was according to the state-run news. A hospital alerted authorities of the patient's case on Saturday. The plague, which is caused by bacteria transmitted through flea bites, infected animals, is one of the deadliest bacterial infections in human history. During the Black Death in the Middle Ages, it killed about 50 million people in Europe. Now, modern antibiotics can prevent complications and death if administered quickly. But that's the best thing they can say about our chances.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. I never know, because I do know the way the news works is when things get hot, they have a little momentum to them. And if you hung around long enough, there'd be stories like pit bull attacks, and then you'd
murder
hear,
hornets.
Yeah. Well, what would happen is, like, a pit bull would attack a 5-year old and kill it. And then two nights later, they'd go, another pit bull attack. And then, but it turns out this one's not a pit bull. This one is a Shih Tzu, and it didn't hurt anybody. But the news would, like, we're on this pandemic thing out of China. Like, we're kind of digging this. So I can't quite tell if we should really be frightened or we're just on a roll.
Here's the thing. How many people would wake up and look at the newspaper every day in December, January, November, and read these stories about coronavirus and think, whatever, it's just another one of these things. You know what I mean? Sure. That was me.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Yeah.
It's everyone.
Would you like me to make your point, Adam?
Mm-hmm.
There's one that's a little closer to home. A case of a rare brain-destroying amoeba has been confirmed in Florida, according to CNN. The Florida Department of Health on Friday announced that there's a confirmed case of a microscopic single-celled amoeba that can infect and destroy the brain. It's usually fatal, according to the Department of Health. Since 1962, there have only been 37 reported cases of the amoeba in Florida. The amoeba is typically found in warm, fresh water like lakes, rivers, ponds, and the DOH has cautioned people who swim in those freshwater sources to be aware of the amoeba's possible presence, particularly when the water is warm.
Let me tell you this. People that do a lot of pond swimming don't heed warnings like us non-pond swimmers do. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Speak for yourself.
I know guys, the guys who hit those rope swings and those Line and Kugel commercials, they don't watch CNN all day and wring their hands. As I think we're starting to figure out with some of the guys hitting the beach on the 4th of July and stuff like that. Like, those people don't heed warnings. That's what I've learned. If you're willing to go into a pond, you're rolling the dice in life, and or lagoon, but mostly ponds. I think lagoons are like ponds with clearer water. I don't know. Nothing ever good happened in a pond, you know? But if you're going in that pond, then you ain't that worried about parasites or amoebas. Sorry.
You make a good point, because when we went to Fallbrook, this little cabin in Fallbrook near Temecula last weekend, and on the way back is Lake Elsinore. I don't know anything about Lake Elsinore. It's just a giant body of water. And I said, we got to go to Lake Elsinore. It's right there. So we pulled off and I put my feet in the water and I kind of walked in, and there's, you know, a couple people there, and I posted a picture. I'm like, hey, in Lake Elsinore. And usually I get like, ooh, you know, looking good or whatever. Every comment was, what are you doing? Get the fuck out of there.
It's polluted. So it's horrible.
I didn't know it had, well, standing water, essentially. It's just one big standing pond that people, you know, cruise around on and stuff. So I, you know, the locals will tell you.
Yeah, water's a lot like people. Like, if they don't keep, if it doesn't keep moving, it gets evil. You know what I mean? Like,
that's right.
Activated.
Yeah, like it just sits there, and then it gets mosquito larva in it, and the next thing you know, it gets scum and moss, and next thing you know, there's a creature climbing out of it from the black lagoon.
That's exactly right.
This amoeba, though. Look out for the amoeba. Don't worry about the sharks, the snakes, the little worms that swim where they're not supposed to.
Yeah.
The people.
The people. Right. Yeah, the people. When you go to the pond for a dip, it's the people you got to worry about. Pond people. Oh, yeah.
Someone from Kansas, I can attest to what you just said.
Yeah, I would always say, like, the guys, when I was, I used to kind of think about it when I worked construction, because the guys that wanted to go to the beach, like, if you said, what are you doing for the weekend? They'd go, we're going to the beach. Those guys were fine. The guys who went to the river, those are the guys you had to steer clear of. Those were the scary guys, the go-to-the-river guys.
I go to the river.
You go to the river.
Where I live.
That's my point.
The river's the place to be.
Uh-oh. Now many of the people who are going to read your next book and be outraged can start thinking about where the river is.
I'm going to break into song right now, okay? It goes down to the river.
Yeah. Do you go down to the river?
I do.
Is it freezing cold?
Colfax, California. It looks like, it's so beautiful, it looks like a movie set. You can't even believe it. Crystal clear water, and you go diving in, jumping in. And
is it freezing cold? Or
damn right, yes.
It's brutal, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, there's a place, I went for a hike with, I think I went with Jimmy and Danny Two Sheets and the wives a million years ago. We went to a wedding in Yosemite. Yosemite's amazing.
It is.
And took a hike. And we hiked all along, and there's a path, and then at some point you get to the end, and you can jump off into this sort of body of water, but it's all melted glacial, whatever, snow runoff stuff, and it's fucking freezing, but that's kind of the challenge. The challenge, I don't know where that is. Is it, there's a trail around Yosemite, and then there's some huge body of water, I'm sure. It'd be illegal to walk on the trail now or jump into the water or anything. You'd be arrested. But it's freezing snow runoff water, but you take the plunge, and it's good for what ails you. Sorry. Go ahead, Gina Grad.
Well, a tell-all book by President Trump's niece, Mary, who's a licensed clinical psychologist.
Uh-oh.
Did you freeze up?
Did she freeze up, or did the Trump administration get hold of the internet? Wait, did Kanye West get hold of the internet?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. So it's a tell-all book. I've seen it. I mean, I've heard of it. AJ, right. Have you heard?
Of course.
You're in that world.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, yesterday, okay, now I'll sound very arrogant, but yesterday, my Truman book was number two on a bestseller list of books about presidents, and her book was number one. I have not read it yet.
Brian.
I think the judge just struck down the temporary restraining order against the book, so it most likely will come out. The tangential question for AJ about his current book, as long as we're waiting for Gina to come back, it's when you were describing the situation that Truman found himself in versus Dewey and the whole way that the election was shaping up and surprised people, reminded me a little bit of the current situation we're in, where we have an incumbent president, kind of a tumultuous last few years, and he's down in the polls, and a lot of people are writing him off. How do you see that, putting you on the spot, but how do you see it sort of related?
Of course.
To
well, listen, I started this book intending for it to come out during this election cycle, because I figured it would get me in front of microphones like this, but I didn't anticipate how relevant it would be. I mean, the stuff that was going on is the same stuff that's going on now, a rise in white nationalism, violence against African Americans,
Oh, was that part of the...
Oh, yeah, 1948, the FBI. The FBI on a trail of a major presidential candidate regarding a possible Russian conspiracy.
Fear that...
I mean, I found these documents, like documentation. They were terribly afraid that Moscow was going to try to influence the election here in 1948. The Democrats thought that the Russians were going to try to help the Republicans win. Republicans thought that Moscow was going to try to help the Democrats win.
Mm. Was there a Kanye West type character?
Yes, his name is Henry Wallace.
Scats Muldoon.
Henry Wallace would be the Kanye West character.
Yeah, nothing is really new. I mean, even going back to thousands of years, like really nothing is new. We think it's new.
Violence and refugees in the Middle East. I mean, all of the things we're arguing about now and trying to figure out now, same things. Oil, where are we going to get our oil from?
Again, going back to SNL, I always say, like, turn on the news from SNL from 1977, and the anchor will be like, trouble in the Middle East. It's trouble in the Middle East. It's been 50 years. All right, let me hit LifeLock, and we'll get Gina back. I think she's already
here. Yeah, I'm right here. Sorry about that.
That's all right. Cyber criminals aren't letting the COVID-19 stop them from committing tax fraud with the extension of the tax filing date to July 15th. It's going to be a rise in tax-related identity fraud. Remember, the IRS will not contact you directly by email or text message or other online platforms. That's not how the IRS works. So if you're getting a message from the IRS, it's probably not the IRS. It's probably these hacks trying to steal your identity. Identity thieves are getting smarter all the time, and that's why you need comprehensive protection, especially during tax season. When your most vital information is being shared out there, protect yourself with the industry leader, LifeLock. Right, Dawson?
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. LifeLock and see threats you might miss on your own. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year by using promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LifeLock or head to LifeLock.com. Use promo code Adam for 25% off.
All right, Gina, we were talking about Trump niece book.
Yeah, so that'll be out sooner than expected. And the one interesting thing I wanted to get in was that the family argued that Mary is bound by a non-disclosure agreement. She signed one following the legal battle over the will of her grandfather, Fred Trump Sr. But the appellate judge ruled that the NDA does not apply to Simon & Schuster, which has not agreed to surrender or relinquish any of its First Amendment rights. So the book is coming out. So it might have applied to Mary, but it doesn't apply to her book publishing company.
What a weird loophole.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm guessing that, well, I don't know who the judge is, but it doesn't sound like he's a fan. No. I think that's probably how it
might
works.
Not be. So.
Yeah.
What is it we're going to find in that book?
Because it's kind of like saying, look, you have a non-disclosure, but your bullhorn doesn't. Yeah. So we can go ahead and say whatever you want into that bullhorn. And it's kind of like, yeah, I guess, but that's kind of what we're saying. But anyway,
here's the thing.
What could it say?
What could possibly be said in that book that's going to surprise people at this point?
Well, yeah, I mean, we just had the John Bolton book out and it's like, okay, we get it.
The question is, yeah, would anybody be surprised? You know, well, look, whether it's, I don't know, Weinstein, Trump, Clinton, both Clintons, Bill Cosby, like, is anyone surprised at anything? Is there anything that would be there where you'd go like,
to imagine a scenario in there. Like, just make it up in your head. Well, that would be and I can't think of anything. Nothing is going to surprise me.
I'm sure there'll be some salacious stuff.
Of course.
When the White House insiders write their stuff, it's White House shit. And this is family shit. But you're right. Like, what would shock you? What would truly shock you at this point?
Well, I think I'm only going off of like two sentences that they released from the book. But some of it is about like, you know, the possible sort of tyrannical or whatever quality of his father and how, you know, that may have scarred Donald. And, you know, like you said, like the family, like the psychology stuff.
When the Steele dossier first hit all those years ago now, the original stuff was like he'd go to Moscow and get hookers to pee on him. And we're like, yeah, okay. It was a weekend, wasn't it? I mean, we're not talking about a Tuesday.
I mean, who doesn't remember the video footage of Bill Clinton testifying when they asked him the cigar question? Mm. You don't remember that?
No.
What is
that one?
The cigar question where they're saying blah, blah, blah. Am I making this up? That's what I remember. Just the look on his face when he's on camera being asked the questions about what he did. in the White House.
Well, maybe we'll try to find it.
I remember the what is, you know, trying to weasel out of, you know.
I remember the what is, and then when I kind of realized that everyone was just whatever, whoever they were, there was an interview he was doing with some news anchor, and he just like looked at him, and he just went, I did not have sexual relations with that
woman. Did he ever say that on under oath?
Yeah.
No, I don't know if he said it under oath, but...
The interview.
That's when I kind of just realized anyone will say anything at any time, especially if you're asking them about getting blown by an intern. You know what I mean?
In the White House.
People will lie. Yes.
Right.
Well, and that's...
Well, Gina just froze up again. AJ, let's talk about that river.
Right on. I can tell you river stories all day long. And they would be the scariest stories ever spoken on your program.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
No, I'm just kidding.
I like the idea. I think for a lot of people, especially in LA, this notion of moving somewhere a little more rural is now, you know, maybe 9 months ago it didn't seem like a great idea, or even 5 months ago, but now it seems like a capital idea. You think there's going to? You were ahead of the curve. Why did you do that?
Well, that was my plan. The honest answer is I wanted to go skiing. I'm moving into my next career, which is ski bumming. So I wanted to begin that process. So I live near Squaw Valley. That's it. That's the answer.
What is your schedule like on a daily basis when you're working on a book?
You know, it's insane. Like I in order to do what I do for a living, you have to be a little psycho, because I go into my office at 7 o'clock in the morning. I come out at 6. I don't talk to another human being all day.
Really?
Yeah.
Because so much of it is research-based?
Yeah, research, reading, filing, collating, like putting the different things in different folders for 10 straight hours.
How does your publishing work? Do you just finish one book and roll into the next deal, or how does that work?
Yeah, well, I mean, essentially, I have to, because I have to continue to get paid. But, you know, I have to earn a living like you. So at the end, when I'm finished with a book, there's always a next one that's going to, you know, have the proposal done,
mm-hmm.
and et cetera, et cetera.
Gina and Bald have been lost, and we're having some technical difficulty. So AJ and I will just chat in the remainder of the show.
That's why I came down here, to be with you in person, for that reason.
To get rid of – oh, because you knew we could have lost you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you came in. I'm always happy when people are in person. It's easier. Although, back to your favorite Sean Penn, the chances of that guy driving from Malibu to Glendale are probably slim to none. So him coming in via Zoom was probably a good way to get him.
I haven't heard that show yet. What did you ask him about?
Talked about Bad Boys.
Mm-hmm.
Talked about At Close Range, another good with Christopher Walken.
Who was it?
Talked about his dad flying in a B-24.
He got some incredible interview recently with a political figure internationally. I can't remember who it was.
Hugo Chavez.
Wow.
Or no, El Chapo?
Yeah.
Yeah, El Chapo.
How did he do that?
Hey, Sean Penn. I don't
exactly.
know. Yeah, I don't know how that worked. Here's something. Everyone heard it, so I don't want to recap too much of it. But big woodworker, big home improvement woodworker guy.
That kind of makes sense.
Yeah, and he said something that I thought was interesting, which has always been kind of my point, which is during the course of this hour, 5 minute interview, he must have smoked 4 cigarettes.
Is that right?
But he said, when I go in the garage and I get in on a wood project, I'll go 5 hours without smoking.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's why you got to get to the garage. So whatever your smoking is, maybe it's hand-wringing or watching too much CNN or whatever it is, what is your vice? What is that thing you do too much of when you have too much time? That's the reason you need to get to the garage and get busy.
For me, it's martinis.
Yeah. Well, that's easy, too. I mean, that's another reason why you got to get to the garage.
What's your vice?
My vices are bad TV shows. Like The Love Boat or something like that. But in a weird way, I feel like I have a job where I have a job where, like, I'm a traveling salesman and I can eat at Jack in the Box and write it off. Like, everything to me is just a part of a conversation that I kind of store, and I kind of go, I'm going to study the Love Boat. Like, see how society was in 1979 and just what they did. Like, the Love Boat had a ship's doctor who was openly sexually aggressive to the passengers, and they highlighted it. Think about that. Think about that in today's world. You know what I mean? Like, he's the doctor for the ship, and he stands there while, like, chicks are checking in, coming on the boat, like, oh, I'll see you later, Mrs. Swanson.
Well, think, like, of all the examples. I mean, there's legions of examples of things that seemed like a great idea then. What's the Clint Eastwood movie where he rides in on a horse, before he says a single word, he rapes a woman, and he's the hero of the movie? Do you remember that one? High Plains Drifter.
High Plains Drifter. Yeah. I like a martini as well, and I'll also, not every night, but on occasion, smoke a cigarette at the end of the day, which is, no one else can do that. Evidently not. Sean Penn smoked as many cigarettes in a one-hour interview as I might do in a week or something, but I'm the only person who, at midnight, can just go smoke a cigarette.
What's the brand?
American Spirit, I think. Spirit, yes. And martini as well. But the key to all this shit, as I try to explain to people all the time who are, like, giving up everything or doing a cleanse or whatever that thing is just take it easy with everything, and then you can kind of do whatever you want.
Sometimes that's not so easy.
No. It's a wiring thing.
It is a wiring thing.
And some people have a gene, and that gene says, I can't just go to Las Vegas and play $10 hands of blackjack. I have to up it, and I have to stay all night. And if that's your gene, then you shouldn't be going to Vegas. That's kind of the problem.
But what's more fun than going to Vegas? If that's your gene where you feel like, I can't go to Vegas, but going to Vegas is all I want to do. That makes my life pleasurable.
Yeah.
Brings the only joy. It's just an example.
No, I agree. But that's try to wire yourself for balance and moderation, if you can. I mean, I've always said, like, look, I'm not gonna pour myself a highball at noon because I like drinking. And if I started doing that, then I'd have to quit drinking.
Well, what do you think about this? Say you're going on stage, you're doing comedy,
mm-hmm.
and you've learned from experience that three beers before you go on makes you funnier and more successful.
Mm-hmm.
Are you gonna do it? And you got 7 nights in a row. And then, you know, so you need 3 drinks before you go on, and you know it's going to make you funnier.
I think, first off, it's probably something you do for some period of time. And then at some point you start thinking, how can I be as funny on 2 beers? You know what I mean? And you try to work your way into that space.
That makes sense.
That's kind of, I would never say don't do it or no one's going to do it or whatever. No, that's how people are. Like, if it works, it works. They do it. But have an eye toward 2 beers and then 1 beer kind of thing before you go on stage as you do it. Now, the other thing is there's a direction where you go, I'm funny on 3 beers. I'll be hysterical on 4 beers.
Right.
And that's what happened to Artie Lang or whomever. Right. So that's always that dance.
I worked on an amazing profile of Artie Lang. I was the editor. It was a great writer named Mike Guy. And it was in Playboy magazine.
What year?
2007, something like that. Mm-hmm. And the first scene is Artie coming off stage. And the first thing he says is, how am I going to come down from this? Because he just slayed the crowd. The crowd's going nuts. He's super high on it, you know? And he's like, how am I going to come down from this?
Yeah, see, that's another wiring thing, which is I never feel anything after doing a great night of stand-up. When I walk off stage, I'm right back to whatever my resting pulse is, and I'm like, well, when are we eating or when are we going back to the hotel? Like, that is my default setting. So I think if you're getting a high off it, then it makes sense that you need to synthesize that high with something else at some other time. But if you're not getting a high off it, then what do you need to replace?
That's right. I mean, that's an amazing talent that you have. You can walk off the stage and be like, all right, ham sandwich, ham on rye, lettuce, tomato.
Yeah. And then Mike goes, who are you talking to? No, I don't know. I wouldn't look at it as a talent, and that's probably not what you meant. Anyways, like a talent.
No, I mean it. I mean it.
I don't know. I wouldn't think of it as a talent. Do you think of it as a talent?
Yeah, let me put it to you this way. When I finish a book, or even a single day where I feel like, okay, I kicked ass today. I wrote something really good. I'm really happy with it. I feel like I'm like wired for three martinis. And I have to like talk myself through the night, be like, okay, you're going to have one tonight. My wife will sit with me and she gets it.
Right.
She helps.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. I don't have that sort of, I know the difference between a good show, a bad show, and a great show, you know, and I like the great shows better than the good shows, no doubt about it. But as soon as we're done, it's time to turn the page and immediately start thinking about whatever's next.
Right.
Don't really have that, let's sit and relish this. Yeah. Let's just get going and let's, whatever, let's go to the hotel, or we got to get up early, or let's get some food, or let's go sign books out in the lobby, or whatever that thing is. It's just whatever's next.
Makes me think of what Sean Penn, like how many cigarettes did Sean Penn smoke when he walked out of that room with El Chapo? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, it is kind of refreshing to see a guy just smoking in his house, too. When's the last time you saw someone just sitting in their living room just smoking like they would do when I was a kid? You just walk in. I'd walk into my buddy Steve. He used his house. Both his parents just be sitting in their small apartment just smoking, talking to you the whole time, you know, or sending one of the kids down to buy him a pack of
That's
cigarettes.
Right.
That was always a good one, too. All right, let me hit Geico here right now. Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies. That's 15% on top of the money you're already saving by going with Geico. So you save if you go with Geico, and you save an additional 15%. If you really go with Geico, never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save that extra 15% when you switch. By October 7th. Visit Geico.com to learn more. That's Geico.com. AJ Baim, the book, Dewey Defeats Truman. Excelsior, my friend. Another resounding achievement and success for you. We always root for AJ because he writes such great books.
I like that.
Consider him a friend of the show. So you can go to Amazon and get that today. And I might as well get my book, which is coming back on this Saturday. So thank you in advance for that. AJ, we look forward to whatever you have in store and bringing you in whenever you complete it.
Really appreciate it. Thank you, Adam.
God knows whatever other projects we got down the pipeline for us. Go to adamcarolla.com for all the live shows. Dallas, San Antonio, Tempe, Arizona. Coming up, and go to Chassis, CHASSY, and look at some of our cool racing docs there. And until next time, it's Adam Carolla for Gina Gradball, Brian, and AJ Baim saying mahalo.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. Pick up Adam's book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal. It's available everywhere. Get the links at adamcarolla.com.
Well, let me tell you about Geico. Geico's offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies. So you probably got one of those. Maybe got all those. That's 15% on top of the money Geico already saves you because they do such a great job. So what are you waiting for? Take care of business and take care of it with Geico. It's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit Geico.com.